Hi, I'm Alexei. I'm the president of hospitality, travel, and wellness at QuestX.
Welcome to a very special Smack episode live from IHRF in Berlin. My name is Florian Montag, and today Alexei Kajavi, president hospitality, travel, and wellness at QuestX, joined me to review this year's show, the investor sentiment for 2024, and share some behind-the-scenes insights about QuestX hospitality strategy and Alexei's personal career. Enjoy. Welcome, Alexei, to the Smack Hospitality Podcast. We're sitting here on day three of IHRF in Berlin at the Interconti. I would love to start about, having a short review of the show. Big conference, of course, in the investment space, especially the focus more and more on EMEA. But for the listeners who maybe don't know IHRF or who are not out of the space, could you just share what's the core mission of IHRF EMEA, and especially this year in 2024?
Yeah, well, thanks, Florian. It's great to be here with you and nice to see you again. A Young Leader Award. So IHRF was created 25 years ago with the simple mission of connecting the hotel real estate owners with the rest of the ecosystem, particularly the brands. For those of the listeners that don't know about hospitality, it's often that, frankly, it's an asset light model. So Marriott doesn't own the actual building, or Hilton, or, Accor for that matter. And it's increasingly becoming much more of that type of business model. So back, 25 years ago, it was really just built off of that simple premise, which is let's connect the folks that invest in the buildings and are buying and selling hotel real estate assets with advisors, with lawyers, with all the folks, professional services, advisory, valuation, that help with a deal to get done, and then the brands. Over the last 10 years, it's also increasingly been about asset management. So what makes owning and running a hotel so unique to other forms of asset classes is you don't just sit back and collect a rent, but you're actually, operating a living, breathing business within those bricks. And so, that is increasingly becoming more complex. More brands are coming about. And then there's the customer. The customer isn't static either. They're constantly changing. New generations are coming up. There are new demands, new outbound travelers, whether that be from Asia or the Middle East or Latin America. So the industry is ever changing, with new challenges and technology and customer preferences and all that. And that makes the program as well as the attendees, ever changing, diverse, and it keeps it very exciting. But also the core premise hasn't changed. We connect, the world's best and brightest investors, that are highly qualified. So this year we have over 600 equity investors. About 200 of them have never come to IHRF before. And that's because there's a lot of equity that is entering into this space, that was in office or retail or logistics. So they never would have thought that they would own any hotel asset classes. So they're coming in. So in many ways, we've stuck to our knitting. The core promise is the same, but it continues to become more interesting and more diverse. And that's just great. We continue to grow and evolve.
That's super interesting, especially looking at asset classes and a bit on the sentiment that you say. Actually, there's a lot of new investment or investors, at least, coming out from residential and all of that, as especially COVID has impacted the office space and all of that. Looking now on the last few days at IHRF, you say new investors are coming, have the interest. What's the sentiment of the show? How are people looking at 2024? As let's say 2023 was not necessarily the year of deal making. Will it be different?
I think everyone's expecting it to be different. To some degree, it can't get worse. It's been very slow. Over the last 2 years, we've had just a number of issues impacting the transaction market. Inflation has gone up, therefore interest rates have gone up, and it's become very difficult to underwrite a transaction. At the same time, on the sell side, meaning if you own a hotel asset, You've had probably the best 2 years of revenue, whether that be RevPAR, occupancy, and of course now ADR, which is a combination of the two. So there really hasn't been the stress to induce that sale, or the valuations or the expectations on the sell side have been so high. So, you know, it's been a difficult environment in which to get a deal done. At the same time, you know, there's $300 billion of dry powder that's sitting on the sidelines waiting to deploy. And the pressure is building for that capital to deploy. And then you get to your point, you get the stress in the resi, in the logistics, in the office, which we've seen, you know, across capital cities with now, you know, remote working and all of that. And a lot of capital that was never looking at hospitality is now also looking at hospitality. So in a way, it's this pressure cooker of demand with a bid-ask gap that that has frankly been quite wide. And so deals haven't gotten done. So, you know, coming in, everyone always asks, you know, what's the mood, or what will the mood be like? Last year was one of cautious optimism. Mm-hmm. This year,
everybody's always trying to be optimistic, right?
Yeah. Well, we are in hospitality, right? I mean, if we weren't optimistic, I think there'd be something, you should probably join a different industry. I did hear a quote, which this yesterday, in fact, which I think really epitomizes kind of the sentiment, which was the mood at MIPIM was a bit of a funeral, and the mood here at IHIF is a party. And, you know, other asset classes are really struggling. And, you know, nobody wants anyone to struggle. It's just the way that it's gone. I mean, hospitality has gone through its own issues in the past. But, you know, there are some real significant changes, I think, that are happening. One is stabilization. Interest rates are stabilized. There are expectations for interest rates to come down. But at the same time, consumers. I think the consumer has reset from COVID that, you know, life is fragile, and it's not infinite. And, you know, they're going to live that. So the demand for experiences, which we're in the experience economy, is at an all-time high. And many people believe that it will stay, that people just want to live their lives, that, you know, how many watches and cars and, you know, things can you buy? And let's buy experiences instead. And so there's a real strong amount of positivity and conviction and confidence that we survived COVID, and we will certainly survive, you know, the instability that's in the market today. And there's a lot of instability, whether that be geopolitical or macroeconomic, but really, really positive optimism. Almost, I would say, braced optimism, meaning there's a fortitude in the market.
Is it a bit coming out from, let's say, from COVID? And Chris Nassetta was saying on stage that we've mastered COVID, we got out of COVID better than ever, and we're now an even more resilient company. Is it that kind of survival mode that it's now saying all the big companies and operators saying, hey, we can also take on whatever comes next?
I think so. I think, you know, there's an old saying, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. Yeah. And we all got punched repeatedly.
Significantly.
Yeah, all of us.
I mean, you guys, I remember IHF, first year of COVID, it was canceled three days before, something
oh
like
my
that,
God,
right?
That was the hardest. It was probably the hardest business decision I ever took. And we took it 2 days before. You're absolutely right, Florian. No one had canceled. ITB was still moving ahead. MIPIM was still moving ahead 2 weeks later. No event outside of Mobile World Congress in Barcelona had canceled. And, you know, there was, then we were the highest numbers we had ever been. It was 2020. It was in 2 days' time. And we were forced to make that decision. Ultimately, it was the right decision to take because it was for the health and safety of our customers and our employees. And then sequentially ITB canceled and everybody canceled, the world canceled. But then hospitality shut down. And I'll never forget, you know, being in the middle of Piccadilly Square in off of Regent Street in London, one of the most busiest intersections in the world, And it was just me and my wife and my two daughters in the middle of sort of April 2020. And I don't think anyone could have imagined that that happened. And yet, in very short time, in fact, that summer of 2020, I was in Venice in Lake Como, experiencing the most incredible empty, northern Italy that you could imagine. And so the impulse to travel was, when we were all in lockdown, I do think absolutely fundamentally changed the consumer to say, look, this is what's important to me. Spending time with my family and my friends, gathering experiences. And again, as I said, that's what we do. We're in the hospitality industry. And so, you know, we all got through that. And I do believe that made us stronger as an industry. And I see that fortitude both on the operator side, on the investor side, but also on the consumer side. I mean, you know, we all had to get our vaccines and the paperwork and then flying was terrible. You had masks. Well, if you could do that, well, you know, travel today probably seems like a breeze. So I do think that COVID, albeit it was terrible, just absolutely horrific for, you know, in terms of the worldwide deaths and the sickness and the economy. I mean, it was just terrible, but we got through it. And I do think it gave long-term fundamental opportunities for hospitality. And I think we're seeing that today.
Definitely. I think, and you can really hear that from people saying, hey, people, if they were able to travel or wanting to leave their houses after COVID or during COVID, it's becoming more and more important. We see also experiences developing. So it's not necessarily always just traditional hotel businesses, but a lot of kind of adjacent spaces, as you guys have call it also here. If it's from hybrid hospitality in terms of serviced apartments, longer stay, co-living, but also, kind of camping and all of that is professionalizing and you see the big players entering that. How do you see that market evolving? We spoke before we started recording about the big brands having, you know, a house of brands with so much, different, hotel brands, but also I heard a lot about now investing more into new experiences. How do you see the hotel chain of the future operator? Will it have a lot of mixed, even more mixed offerings and trying to capture even more of the share of wallet?
I think it will. I think the loyalty programs are probably the canary in the coal mine to show that it's not just about a hotel stay, but it's about the full 360-degree experience. And that the benefits that you can reap from that loyalty program is not just, you know, staying at a resort for 5 days at the end of the year after you've done all your business travel, but it could be in experiences at concerts, it could be at sporting events, it could be in restaurants and Epicurean type experiences. So I do think that the brands have already recognized and have already adapted to the fact that they are in the experience economy. And I think the question of what is hospitality is not just putting your head on a pillow at night, but it is the wider experience economy. How wide it gets and how wide we open that aperture, I think, is still to be determined, right? Because you know, we have some investors here in senior living. I'm sure some would question whether that's the experience economy we should be focused on. I mean, it is, you know, there are some senior living facilities that are, non-healthcare related, which will probably feel like a very nice, holiday experience. And there's a ton of the opportunities in that.
Yeah. And I mean, we with our business on the tech side, we actually work more with hotels or serviced apartments and all of that. But we actually have now senior living customers who are saying, again, not healthcare related. It's more people want to live together because they are lonely. They live much longer. They're much healthier and they want to have, place where they can stay, where they can book services, where they can go to restaurants and all of that, but in a senior friendly environment. Yeah. where you can really see how that is evolving. And I think we saw the first trends on student living, where we saw, the social hub and all of these players bringing that sector closer to hotels. And I see it going up. And the CEO of IHG was also talking about rich retirees becoming or fueling travel. So,
yeah, I think the real question around hospitality is, are we an industry or are we a way of life? And not to get too philosophical, but it does impact business models. And when you also have these two sort of tangential things happening in society today, one is the epidemic of loneliness. To your point, people are living longer. And they're frequently living, if they're older, they're alone, and they're also healthier in many cases, hopefully. And so, there's a lot of people that are living by themselves and no longer working and no longer a part of a community or a church or whatever it may be. And so there is an epidemic of loneliness. And then on the other side, you have AI, where, artificial intelligence is able to do tasks that otherwise humans were able to do. And in many ways, it's just a pragmatic, it's a phone call, it's an operator that's AI, or it's a check-in. But, you add those up and you incrementally or you accretively lose human touch. And in the middle of that, I do believe sits us, hospitality. And there is a higher purpose to what we do. And so I'm not suggesting that hospitality is going to cure the epidemic of loneliness, or that it is the antidote for AI. Not that AI needs or would take an antidote, but I do believe that hospitality has a massive higher purpose to exist in a world which looks like it's now becoming deglobalized or starting to, the globalization has stopped. You have more people living alone and more people being by themselves, more people spending time on their phones rather than engaging with one another. And that for me, is just it reads opportunity, and it reads purpose. And then I think it's up to really smart people, which fortunately in hospitality, we have a lot of them, to figure out the business models within each of them. But I think hospitality is if I had to decide, if I was a young, student and somebody asked me, what do you want to study? I think it would be hospitality. I think hospitality is where it's going to be at for the next 50, 100 years of our lives as we continue to live in a very weird and wild times. I don't think those will end. And I think the ability to serve up human to human, people powered experiences in a way that feels authentic, feels sincere. I think that will be in high demand for many years to come.
Definitely. I think the big question is who can afford that in the future, to have really that people centric, people by people. As I think the guest centric experience is more doable in the short term future with AI, with technology implemented. We can see that with concepts like Numa and others who are really leading the way in terms of tech first and also doing massive personalization through implementing AI and others. However, of course, looking at labor costs and who's even working in hospitality, is that we can see that personal touch, really human by human, becomes more and more premium and more luxury. And a question on that, I mean, you have the tech hub here at IHF, and it's been something you've been implementing, I think, 6, 7, 8 years, something like that. However, let's say it's not always main and center stage, of course, because it's also a bit of a different focus. However, we can see that the interest on tech, on how this changes these business models, on how it brings new concepts to market, is doesn't always get too much focus, especially from investors or others. How do you see that? Do you see a shift there as well? Or do you feel maybe investors and others should care more about that as well, and how that can impact their business? What's your take on it?
Yeah, we did launch it 7 years ago, so you're absolutely right. And because before that, tech had no place at the IHIF. And the reason we brought her on is because we actually measure the amount of engagement our editorial stories generate on our newsletters and on our website. And we're able to track the domains. So we know that, you know, investors are reading more of this type of content than that type of content. We also have our investor sentiment index, where we index in the top 200 equity investors around the world on a number of issues. And one of them is tech. And 71% of capital investors are looking to rehaul their tech stack. And there are anywhere from 5 to 10 technologies in an average, you know, hotel tech stack. That's a lot of transformation. We were probably a bit too early 7 years ago. I mean, it took some time, and then obviously we had that little pandemic in the middle. It is what we're seeing now is that two things I think have really kind of catapulted the tech, you know, portion as it pertains to hotel investors, right? Which is, they are here to do deals. I mean, that's the core of what IHIF is for. But that is that one, deals have been few and far between. The transaction market has been much slower. So the hold period on these hotels have increased, which means you've got to be driving net operating income of that asset. So it's no longer just about the real estate appreciation and, you know, selling it off in 5-7 years, whatever it may be, and timing the market on that. But it's really about driving optimization and driving profitability in how you run that hotel. So I think that's been one of the sort of macro issues, which has really made tech front and center, or at least critical to driving that net operating income. And at the same time, running hotels become infinitely more complex. Part of that is just new technologies, but how do you get those technologies to work together? You know, and it's not just building a better XML API connection. And so investors and asset managers at the fund side or as a third party asset manager see tech as a true optimizer of driving net operating income. And I think the really smart ones see it as a way to liberate staff, because the third sort of thing that's been going on in the background, I think it's a point you made a little while ago, Florian, is that labor's been a challenge as well. You know, not only is it hard to find labor, but it's become more expensive. And so that has impacted profitability. So the really smart ones in hospitality are not using tech to replace people, but they're using tech to enhance service. And I think that's really where the innovation will occur, because, you know, frankly, I don't think anyone's going to a hotel to be left alone. I think they're going to a hotel to have perhaps moments of silence or moments of isolation or calm, if you will. But ultimately, they're going there for a service and for an experience. And so tech does liberate and enhance the ability for people that still need to be trained, that still need to be, you know, serviced and all that. But I do believe tech is much more important in that sense. And that's why the investment community is, I think, celebrating and welcoming the tech hub and tech providers like you guys to IHIF more and more.
Yeah, and I think it's also, as you say, it doesn't just tech replaces, because that's not, should not be the goal. Yeah. Often it's more like even helping to keep the same level of standard with the people you have, but it's also enabling your staff to create more actual hospitality. But at the same time, it's always something important when you look at operators. I think what I see often is still way too little tech decision makers in a really executive or C-level position. Because the more you invest in tech, the more you have touch points via tech, or the more your tech stack is in the middle of your business model, the more you need also people in executive decisions who understand and can then take the right decisions, because it's not just, let's just put something there and it's just going to work out. But it's like staff, right? You need to manage it. You need to control it. You need to try and improve it. And it's a step-by-step process. Maybe just jumping on that, I would love to understand. You said IHF is 25 years existing. Quest Dex has taken it over, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, around 10 years ago.
Oh, no. 23 years ago.
Oh, 23 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah. We acquired it from CBRE, about 23 years
okay,
ago.
Okay, really so 20. Yeah. So how do you make sure to stay up to date every year? How do you decide on content and on what is brought forward? You've also now introduced additional formats in Hong Kong. You have acquired NYU, the format in New York. How do you, with Questex and yourself as your role, strategic behind it, decide on what to do next and how to keep always the content relevant over such a long period of time?
So, I mean, just briefly, it's a great question. And many people don't know this. So Questex is we are a private equity owned information services company, sort of a mid cap type company, but private. And we work in 5 markets. So I have the privilege of running hospitality, travel and wellness. And then we have two other markets, which are life sciences and healthcare. And we do the same thing broadly across all 5 of those markets, which is we inform and we connect. And in that informing, really much of it is just listening. And the way that we're structured as a company is we have the markets. So as I said, I run hospitality, travel, and wellness. The people in my markets are category experts. They are deeply embedded in those markets. We're writing about those markets. We have deep relationships in those markets. We're challenging those markets. And so we take a very much of an outside-in approach to your questions. How do we build the content? Where do we go? What are the topics that we cover? What's the research that we produce? All of that is developed within the market. And then the key to our success is matching that market expertise that we have, whether it be in life sciences and healthcare or travel and wellness and hospitality in this case, with a functional expertise. And so we then have the center of excellence where we have audience development, we have performance marketing, we have event operations, and then you have finance and admin and so forth. But it's, you know, the ability for us to welcome over 2,500 guests to IHIF and to provide them with an incredible hospitality-like experience for hospitality professionals is only because we've got experts that are able to deliver a functional sort of experience. So it's that alchemy of market knowledge where we have advisory boards, we have editors which are deeply embedded in the markets. I come from the market. I've got a hospitality and travel background, fortunately. So we are really deep in the markets with very deep, deep relationships. And we're constantly asking questions, trying to figure out where are the trends, where are the challenges. And that is then brought to life really through the editorial that you read on Hospitality Investor or Hotel Management, to the sessions that you see here and the roundtables that we have. And sometimes it takes time, right? I mean, to your point, we launched the Tech Hub 7 years ago, and I don't think anyone really kind of got it until maybe a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, and it continues to grow now. We just got out of a Greece investment roundtable. We launched that, oddly enough, 7 years ago, I think 2017. There was 5 people in the room when we launched that. There was over 50 people just an hour ago. So we're really good at being able to spot early trends. And we're also very committed that it sometimes takes a bit of time. We may be a bit early to it, but if there's something there, we have empirical data because we know what you read, we know where the engagement is, then we'll stick with it. And that's, I think, a real key to our success. And then we just have people that honestly really love, our people really love what they do, and feel really privileged to be able to bring this business together, this market together, and have them do business, but also have let them have a good time. And there's nothing wrong with B2B being fun. And I think that's critical to our success.
Yeah, it's very interesting to see. I mean, as you say, you're building touch points on all different levels. And I think it's also this kind of information with your news outlets and all of that, which is important to keep people up to date. You've been now in the last year with the acquisition of NYU. You also created the new show in Las Vegas last year. Hong Kong is also quite new. Why this expansion at this stage? And do you also try to cover other topics, or is it more a extension of this show, but now more regional?
So we've had, you know, IHIF for now 25 years, and we've been organizing it, and it's the focus of IHIF is EMEA. But we have over 80 countries that attend Berlin. Much of that is really to promote investment in EMEA or capital coming in to look for investment opportunities. The reality about global hospitality is that it's global. Forgive the obvious answer in that, but not only are travelers traveling around the world, whether they be corporate or leisure, but so is capital. And, you know, pre-pandemic, nearly 50% of all global hotel deals were done by cross-border capital. And it was always a bit of a, I think it was just a bit of a frustration personally, or particularly on my part, that we had IHIF EMEA, which is an incredible event. People love it. It continues to grow, continues to evolve, but we didn't have comparable events like it in the US, which is frankly the largest hotel market in the world. So, NYU is a conversation I've been having for many, many years, with New York University, which is it was a fine establishment, the hospitality school. We were able to put together that deal during COVID, in fact. And I give a lot of, credit and, gratitude to, my investment committee for believing in hospitality. I mean, it was only a short time that we had not been able to, even do IHIF, right? So then to be, negotiating to acquire another event and then launching IHIF Asia right on the same year that we acquired NYU, just goes to show that our conviction for hospitality growth, and also in what we do and the support of the market is unparalleled. It's second to none. So the idea, the thesis around having those events and launching more, we will be launching more events in other regions, is that, hospitality is a global industry. And as much as the consumer is looking for, new destinations and new markets in which to travel to, so is capital. And we want to serve that global investor as well as the local one, with connecting them with capital from all around the world and making that capital more efficient and more effective. And that's only able to be done by having a global portfolio of what we call the IHIF series. So that was really the launch of IHIF Asia and the acquisition of NYU. The launch of the hospitality show was also something that we had been working on, and it was really because running hotels are becoming more complex, and it is a increasingly more challenging business in which to drive profitability, and technology is taking much more of a front and center solution to solving a lot of those problems. Particularly with the franchise model, where franchisees, 70% of all hotels in the U.S. particularly are franchise. And so franchisees are struggling with technology, right? They don't have the skill sets. They don't have the CTO or the IT infrastructure. And so they're looking increasingly to their brands or to vendors directly within tech to drive innovation, help them implement, help them onboard, and then continue to help them. Because as you know, technology doesn't just end, right? You don't just get the system. So the hospitality show was launched in conjunction with AHLA, which is the American Hotel and Lodging Association. We launched that last year in Las Vegas. We had 4,000 attendees. It was the third largest event launch in the world last year. So it was a really incredible and the largest in hospitality. Yep. So, and it's because we really know the markets. We don't say what we think the market needs. We just listen very intently to what the market needs are and the challenges, and we try and at least provide a platform where solutions and discovery of products and solutions can be done. So it was we are big believers in the experience economy. We also are in bars and restaurants. We just love hospitality, and we're very deeply immersed in it.
Yeah, it's incredible to see, and also the level, as you say, of when you guys organize something, people actually come because typically a new show, the first year is always okay. Let's go and see, and people maybe support. But
it's funny you say that, because I do have, I honestly, and I probably shouldn't admit this, I have this nightmare sometimes that no one will show up. You know, it's like the day before an event, and it's just, you know, it's this recurring nightmare that, you know, we're there, we've got all the food, we've got the lights, the stage, and there's absolutely nobody there. So it's probably this like childhood thing that's recurring in me. But no, thankfully I've got much better and smarter people around me that ensure, you know, not only lots of people show up, but they're the right people.
But sort of looking at yourself now, and you, I mean, I don't know how many conferences you attend a year or organize yourself, but looking at a show like IHF, for yourself, what does it mean in terms of preparation for yourself? How does a typical day at IHF, for you look like?
Long days. It's a lot of work. I mean, frankly, we'll get started on IHIF 2025 next week. So the work begins immediately. It's a 12-month job. It's not the only event that we do, so we have to balance our time. So it's a lot of work, and really I give all the credit to the team around me. They do most of the heavy lifting. My day is, you know, I get a little bit of opening, and I appreciate having some really close relationships with some senior leaders in the industry that often, you know, ask if I'll moderate or interview them. And I really love that part of the job, because it's an opportunity to, well, to kind of be on your side right now and ask questions. Cause I just find the people in the industry to be fascinating. And so I really appreciate that part of it. Really, a lot of what I do is just, you know, seeing people, having meetings, talking to our customers, talking to investors, and just greeting them, right? They're not here to meet Questex. The industry is here to meet each other. But fortunately, when we do things well and we are in hospitality, people are very gracious and we do get a lot of gratitude and thanks, which is very nice, because I often feel like I get it and I'm not sure my team hears it, because they're behind the scenes and they don't hear it. So I feel, a responsibility to let them know that I'm taking a lot of credit for the work that they've done. But it's long days. I mean, you know, we didn't get to bed till, you know, probably 1 a.m. in you know, this morning, and we were up at, you know, 6, and some of us are up 24 hours, you know. Unfortunately, not me. I couldn't be here right now. It is a Herculean effort, and it's yeoman's work for 12 months, but it's also one of the only things that I've done in my career, after having worked in construction at 18, putting myself through university, where at the end of the day, you do get to see something was built. And so there is this tangible gratitude, when you're on site at the event, that you do feel this, my God, we built this.
It's real hospitality, right?
Yeah.
It's like a hotel stay or something. That's always incredible to see when the guests are
exactly
happy. And myself and my hospitality background, it was always the most incredible when you just see happy guests, you know, leaving the restaurant or staying
exactly
after the stay. Nowadays in the tech or software business, of course, always nice to see that the customers are happy, but it's very far removed.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get some feedback, but you don't kind of live it in the same way.
Spot on. I think that's the importance of being on site, right? Call your own business, stay at your own hotel, eat your own food, eat your own cooking, go in the back of the kitchen, whatever the analogy may be for your own business. If you have the opportunity to be your own customer and to see it and to experience it, one, and if it's great, you get the gratitude and you really, I mean, it's amazing. It's almost like probably like being an athlete, right? At the end of the game, you feel a victory. And there's not many things in business these days where you can say, oh, I feel victorious. And so this is great. We're very privileged, and we feel that. We all feel very privileged to be able to do this for this industry that we love.
Yeah, definitely. I can only imagine on that level. Maybe a couple questions a bit more personal in your previous life. Have you, as you said, you even did construction for bringing you through university. Maybe share some background to your own personal story on how it all started.
Oh man, that's going a ways back, Florian. No, I grew up real like classic middle class San Francisco. You know, parents were, you know, hippies and very entrepreneurial and innovative in their own way. And yeah, put myself through University of California and graduated in 97 and went right into the tech early dot-com boom that was happening in San Francisco. And in 1997, I probably shouldn't admit this, but there was three OTAs that were launched.
Yeah.
Booking.com, Expedia, and the one that I joined. You know, that, but it gave me this opportunity to work with MIT graduates, Stanford graduates, Harvard, and I was at the table with these incredible, very, very smart people. And it was called unexplored.com. And it did one thing. It gave me this appreciation for technology and for startup, entrepreneurial, opportunities. And third, it just solidified that I want to live my life in sort of travel and hospitality. And I've lived most of my professional career in travel and hospitality. And from there, that obviously wasn't booking.com. So in the dot-com bust, we ran out of cash. It was a great company. It could have done great things. And it ended up being sold off to, Intopia, became another technology as technologies often do. And then from there, I got into hotel consulting, was doing feasibility studies, in fact, for a small boutique consultancy, also in San Francisco, and then, jumped into an entrepreneurial, endeavor, owning an airline in Central America, and that also became a network of independent boutique lodges. And we did that for about 10 years, and that became one of the fastest growing companies in Central America. And then from there, moved back to San Francisco and was in a creative advertising agency focused on travel, hospitality, and outdoor. And then from there, I got a call from the former CEO of Questex. And he was referred to me, and he said he wanted us to sort of look at, wanted me to look at, in fact, this portfolio of hotel investment, which at the time still had something in Asia and so forth. And I, you know, if you would have said to me, 10, 15 years ago, you're going to be in the B2B media space or the event space, I would have laughed at you. Yeah. But, at the core of what we do, which is informing and connecting, I love journalism. I love the media business. And as I said, I love travel and hospitality. I now have the privilege of also overseeing the beauty and wellness markets, which are markets I haven't personally been immersed in, but I've learned them and they're dynamic. They're interesting. And we do the same thing. We inform professionals in those industries and we connect them. And there is a real beauty in being able to do that, because at the end of the day, I can put my head down on my pillow and feel very good that I'm making a living in those true sort of altruistic pursuits of providing some knowledge and connecting professionals in those industries. So it's been kind of a meandering journey a little bit, my own career. It's had a lot of international living, whether it be in Latin America or in London.
Incredible different experiences and different viewpoints on business. I can imagine.
But there's, oddly enough, there's a narrative arc in it. The startup at unexplored.com led to, still translates into, things I do or lessons that I apply today, even though that was 25 years ago. I still think about that experience and the people that I worked with, certainly the creative agency and running, a large scale global marketing, and advertising solutions and campaigns definitely helps, in my current role. But ultimately, I work with people that do most of the work, and I have the privilege of managing some very smart and lovely people that are really good at what they do. And so you end up kind of getting to a point where you enjoy almost other people, having the success and running much of the things that you were kind of in the nuts and bolts of. But also I'm really, I tend to like to roll up my sleeves and get involved as well. I think sometimes probably my people want me to get out of it, but it is pretty fun.
Yeah. I have two final questions. This morning in my subway ride here, I was looking at the Hospitality Insights newsletter this morning, and it was the quote from Sébastien Bazin about how the world is a mess and the leaders are doing what they can to support it. I'm paraphrasing. But that back in the day, there was a couple leaders, especially in the geopolitical side, where you would say you would look up to them and say, okay, I want to be like them or admire them. Are they, and today that this is much harder to answer and find kind of these really inspiring leaders in your career or you today, maybe going out from the politics, but do you have a leader or two leaders or a couple leaders where you say, these have inspired you, these are or still inspiring you today?
Yeah, I had the fortune of working with the former CEO of Xerox. He was actually the chairman of the board for the airline company that that I worked with, and a gentleman named Paul Allaire. I mean, CEO of Xerox is a very big company, very global. But he was very human, and he was very sincere, and he taught me. He taught me that you can be profitable and you can still go out of business based off of cash flow and the seasonality, which very much applies to tourism and hospitality. But more importantly than that, he was a gentleman, and he really did, I think instill in me that you've got to give other people the opportunity, and leading from behind is as important as leading from in front. And I think, I'm still trying to balance what that means and how to deploy that. But he was very influential on my professional career. I never had any formal mentorships, ironically. And I think it's one of the regrets that I didn't. I just was always in a very entrepreneurial environment. And, corporate culture typically starts to happen for very big companies. And unfortunately, in a startup, that's just not happening, right? You're just thrown into the deep end. You're expected to swim very quickly. So I didn't have any formal mentorship, but I do a lot of reading, and I do a lot of, I'm a voracious reader. And I would completely agree with Bazin's comment that I think, leadership today, it's very hard to pinpoint a leader that I think we could all agree is admirable, is inspirational. I also think it's just much harder to be a leader today, right? Because everybody knows everything about everyone, and you have to be on 24/7. And I just don't think that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. I think, yeah, everybody's when the spotlight is on you nowadays, it's a complete different,
it's intense.
Different world. Last question for today. And now you have to take sides. I mean, you have a lot of operators here. You have a lot of hotels you're staying on. What's your favorite brand or what's your favorite hotel, if it's an independent hotel, that you say that's your personal favorite?
Independent.
Independent or brand, if you say it, you have a favorite brand, but it can also...
I have to say one. I can't say two.
You have to say number one, and then you can say close second.
All right, you really put me to it. Okay, I'm going to have to get escorted out of here. So let's embargo this for a few days so I can leave safely. I'll answer it very honestly. For corporate travel, I have an affinity to Kimpton. It's a San Francisco brand. I've stayed there for many, many years. I, in fact, worked at a Kimpton in Union Square. So I love what they've done with the brand. I wish there were more of them, in fact. And then independent, if I could just, snap my fingers and go there right now, it'd be Costa Navarino in Kalamata in Greece. It's an incredible place. And that's all you're going to get out of me, Florin.
I'll put them on my bucket list for my next destination.
I highly recommend Costa Navarino.
Alexi, thank you so much for joining us. It was a really inspiring and insightful conversation. Love to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
You too. It's nice to see you again, Florian.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.